Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
I'm all about letting people take a victory lap and celebrating a great moment in your career. And for Senator Dave McCormick, can we all agree the man deserves a victory lap after last week? And this is, to me, a major moment, not just for Pennsylvania, but what happened here and the kickoff of this huge summit and really kicking off then launching the conversation about AI, energy, and Pennsylvania being front and center. That is huge. So welcoming in Senator Dave McCormick. Congratulations, Senator.
Oh, thank you, Don. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. I mean, and I'm serious. You know, when we look at, you know, all of the news headlines, and there weren't enough, in my opinion, because it's positive news, I think, for the Trump administration, perhaps. But take us through, I want to ask you, as far as what went on with the conference, talking about AI, talking about energy, and even what you maybe, because you're there, right? You're going through that, and President Trump there, multiple cabinet members, CEOs from the private sector, $92 billion of new money coming in. But for you, give me some headlines, if you will, but
yeah,
also...
It was amazing. Well, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it was amazing. So, you know, this all came about, and you know, I may have talked about it, but right after I won the election, I talked to President Trump. He said, what can I do to help you? And I said, there's two things. Number one, come to Pennsylvania for wrestling. Remember, we had him yes. Come for the wrestling national championships.
Right.
And I said, I'd like to do this energy innovation summit. And like all good things in my life, the idea of an energy summit started with Dina. And
we're showing her right now. Give her full credit.
Right. Let's add the technology piece of this. And so the president agreed to come. And we invited CEOs from energy, from the investing world, some of the biggest global investors in the world. We invited technology leaders, and we did a series of fireside chats with key people. Half the cabinet came, Secretary of Treasury, Secretary of Energy, Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of Interior, David Sachs, who's the AI czar, Lee Zeldin, who's the EPA administrator, and CEOs, the most prominent CEOs from around the world, and labor leaders. Bipartisan, Governor Shapiro came. He and I did a panel together on Amazon's investment in Pennsylvania. And the goal was threefold. Number one, use this as a catalyst to get commitments of investment in Pennsylvania. Lots of things have been percolating, but let's drive them home. And getting the President of the United States and being on a stage with all the media in the country was the catalyst. Second, use the fact that the media is coming. We probably had 150 reporters there, Don, to tell Pennsylvania's story. We are at the crossroads. We have the second largest energy production in the world. We have the fourth largest natural gas reserves. We have these incredible skilled workers, pipe fitters, electricians. This AI revolution is going to help skilled workers, blue-collar workers more than anybody. And we have these incredible technologists in places like Carnegie Mellon University, which hosted the conference. So Pennsylvania really is at the crossroads. So tell that story, because we want this $92 billion of investment to be the beginning of a huge flow of capital and opportunity into Pennsylvania. And then third, and this is, I think, what sold the deal to the president. Listen, we promised we were going to create jobs for working families. And this investment is going to create tens of thousands of construction jobs, many thousands of permanent jobs, many thousands of indirect jobs. And so the president was sold. And honestly, it was one of those things where once it started to come together, I think it started to take on an energy. But mm-hmm. So until the very last day, we were getting major CEOs from around the country saying, can I come? And we were oversold. And so a great day for the country, a great day for Pennsylvania, a great day for the president. None of this would have happened without his energy dominance policies, his AI leadership policies, and it was a good day for us to begin to deliver on the promises we made to Pennsylvania.
And so, as far as that goes, there was one statistic as to how many, for example, trained electricians. So we need more. Like I talk about my guys, you know, who are electricians, or my HVAC guys, who you kind of fight. Like sometimes I'm hesitant to even share their name and number with people because they're so in demand because we need more of these individuals. There was one stat out, and you can, I'm sure you have this, that we need to, we need like half a million, I believe, electricians moving forward.
Nationally,
I mean, holy moly.
We need, and that requires a partnership. You know, we have all sorts of great skilled labor capability, but we don't have enough. And I had a lunch in Pittsburgh, this is probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I was with all the building trades. And they said, well, you know, we don't like to invest in the apprenticeship programs until we have the work clearly in front of us. And I said, guys, look at me, trust me, invest. Double, triple, quadruple your apprenticeship programs because it's coming. We got a wave of work that's coming. So the apprenticeship programs, a number of the investments that were announced were investments in job training. Google announced the fact that they're going to train every small business in Pennsylvania on AI. We had a number of things we need to do to support the skilled workforce. Pell grants and need to be evolved to be much more supportive of skilled workers. The GI Bill, which I took advantage of as a young man coming back from Iraq. We need to evolve that so it supports skilled worker training. So there's a lot we need to do to have the workforce needed for the future. But the exciting thing, you know, that AI is going to change a lot. It's going to be very disruptive. There's no doubt about it. It's going to be disruptive to some jobs are going to go away. But I think for the foreseeable future, this revolution is going to create a lot of opportunity for skilled workers. It's going to be a net positive for the trades, and it's going to be very disruptive to some kinds of white collar jobs, journalists as an example. A lot of the things where AI can do 80-90% of the work. I did a search yesterday on AI just out of curiosity. What are Dave McCormick's positions on Ukraine? The chat GPT came back with an outline that would have been 90% of an article on my positions. The journalist that would have taken a day to write that article, it can be written in 2 minutes. But this is going to be a huge thing for Pennsylvania.
Senator, I confess I did the same thing. So that's a sin. But just, you know, and it went through, you know, your combat experience, your military experience, and all of your different policy, you know, platforms. And here's the thing. I would have put up a poll. Who do you trust more, ChatGPT on research on somebody like Senator McCormick or CNN? I think ChatGPT wins, you know?
And no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Don't put the Philadelphia Inquirer in there.
Another thing, you know, I saw that you put out over the weekend that you're proud to support the Genius Act. A lot of people are concerned about crypto only because it's something, you know, that's new, and so people are wary of it. And I know that you've been talking about it as far as the Genius Act and how it bolsters and strengthens the U.S. dollar worldwide.
Yeah, this is a really important step forward. And President Trump had vowed to be the leader in crypto. And if you think of crypto as sort of the next big, or one of the next big evolutions in terms of technology, blockchain and crypto essentially allow financial transactions, and it takes financial institutions out of it. So it creates a lot of autonomy and independence for people. If you're freedom loving and want to have the government play a smaller role, crypto offers the opportunity, and stablecoin in particular offers the opportunity to do a transaction between two parties. Where there's no financial intermediary. The reason this is so valuable is it takes a lot of cost out of the system, but the important thing to know is it's backed by the dollar. So stablecoin is dollar denominated. So in other words, it's just rather than having $100 that you switch back and forth between people, you can do that digitally. And the reason that's so important is stablecoin takes off and is used around the world. It's going to reaffirm the statusy, the primacy of the dollar. The dollar is the reserve currency of the world. That's a huge advantage for America. And by taking this leadership in stablecoin and the Genius Act, I think we strengthen that. The other thing about it is, and I asked a bunch of prosecutors on this, I was worried that crypto and stablecoin would allow would allow bad actors to have transactions behind the scenes, drugs, human trafficking, whatever. Ironically, what blockchain does is it captures every transaction, so it doesn't show who the two different sides of the transaction are, but you can see illicit behavior. And so the prosecutors I talked to about this have convinced me that this is actually going to make it a lot easier to crack down on fraud and illicit finance behavior, while also, again, reinforcing, taking cost out of the financial system, helping individuals have more individual freedom, more liberty, and also reinforcing the reserve currency status of the U.S. dollar.
So it's good news for the dollar. It's good for the, $92 billion, investment that was announced last week. Moving forward, I believe that I saw or read that you said, Senator McCormick, something to the effect that $92 billion investment that we're hearing about, tens of thousands of jobs, but moving forward, it supersizes. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So, well, first of all, we need, one of the things ever since I've, lived in Pennsylvania and ever since growing up here and, running a business here, the thing you hear people say is we gotta create opportunity for our kids. Our kids are, we're an aging population in Pennsylvania. Our kids are, growing up, going to high school, going to college, and they're leaving. And so we've got to create opportunity for them to stay and actually become a magnet for people coming to Pennsylvania from other states. That's the key to our economic growth and opportunity. And so what happened here, I think, with the attention that the summit brought and the investment is there's going to be lots of jobs created, but I think we put Pennsylvania on the map for every major CEO in the world who's thinking about investing. And that's a huge step forward. We need to make it easy for CEOs to invest. I said to Governor Shapiro, listen, they've got lots of choices. We're in a competition with China for AI leadership, but we're also in a competition with Georgia and Tennessee and Virginia and Texas. We need to show them that Pennsylvania is going to be the place that they should invest their dollars, create new opportunity for our young people. And there's a network effect. So if you're a big investor, you want to build a new data center or build a new pipeline or whatever, if you see that there are other companies that have done that, if you see that the infrastructure supports it, if you see that the regulations support it, if you see that the talent pool supports it, that makes you want to invest more. So this $92 billion was a huge shot of adrenaline. It showed the world, it showed investors in the United States that Pennsylvania is a big part of the future. Now we need to land additional planes. As they circle around and look at where they're going to invest, we need to make sure they land in Pennsylvania.
I was looking at, because obviously the rescissions bill, or some call it the Doge bill, passing with that $9 billion of Congress kind of pulling back and looking at the budget, something we all do at the kitchen table, right? And the fact that it's the first time in a very long time that Congress has done that. So as far as the criticisms, I just wanted your comment on that, because I had read, for example, NPR, which the left is losing their mind over, but then I had read it's a tiny percentage of their budget. There's no reason they can't go forth in the private sector, just like the rest of us in media, but just your comment about why it was important to follow that as far as, looking at the budget and seeing where you could trim.
Well, I think, we've got a huge debt problem. We got $37 trillion of debt. We have a $2 trillion a year deficit. It's like a family that earns $100,000 a year spending $150,000 a year. That's how profound it is. So we've got to get control of our spending. And we made some progress on that with the Big Beautiful Bill, but not enough, frankly. The reason the rescissions are so important is in the overall scheme of things, it's not that much money compared to our spending and our debt and our deficit. But I think it shows a discipline where the Doge process revealed, wow, we're spending on things that most Pennsylvanians that I know would not agree with. They would not agree with some of the things we're spending foreign aid on. They would not agree with some of the things that are being broadcast on public radio. And the $1 billion that was taken from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, NPR, I think was really important for the following reason. What's happened is NPR has strayed, really strayed over the last couple decades, and it is a left-leaning media outlet. Now, it's totally fine that we have left-leaning media outlets. We have right-leaning media outlets. We have left-leaning media. It's just not okay for the taxpayers to be paying for it. You know, the people up in Bradford County, Susquehanna County, the people where I grew up in Columbia County, they don't want to pay for left-leaning media, right? Mm-hmm. So this is this is not about the First Amendment or making sure that people have access to lots of information. I'm for a market of ideas where everybody gets to decide what they believe based on what they're able to read in the media. But what we can't have is the taxpayers funding an ideological left-leaning agenda. And the same is true for the foreign assistance. Listen, there's all the floor speeches, Chuck Schumer, oh my God, it's the end of the world. The fact is that we cut about 10% of total foreign assistance. And I think most Pennsylvanians, when they look at the fact that we're spending money on LGBTQ operas in Costa Rica and a bunch of other DEI initiatives in other countries, that's not what foreign aid was for. Foreign aid's for soft powers, for fighting back against China. It's for delivering, you know, the generosity of the American people in war-torn areas in very specific cases. But it's not for funding an ideological agenda. So we gave USAID a relatively small haircut, 10%. We gave foreign aid, rather, a relatively small haircut, 10%, which was just to try to rope in some of this crazy stuff that most Americans and most Pennsylvanians would not support.
Well, Senator, I know it's a busy day with the Senate reconvening today. You have a lot of busy work ahead. We appreciate you taking time out for us.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day, Don.
Oh, you as well. Thank you. Great talking. So, yeah, they have the Senate reconvenes today. They continue on with the job. But last week, that was a big week. I know some of the Sunday shows focused on that $92 billion. But from everything I read and look at, it just looks like this is the beginning. So I hope we bring back some of these jobs that we've lost to southern states. As many people just, I've done, how many interviews did I do over the past several years where people said, yep, unfortunately, all these jobs left because of our tough regulations. And I think it was important that our governor, Josh Shapiro, was relatively quiet last week. And he attended that summit. But I think he has the message, if you will, that this is huge. If you build it, they will come. And he benefits from it, right? So I think that's very important. But I do love, I'll watch to see some of these tech jobs that are coming back. I talk about my guys, like at Marvin E. Cannes. And I've shared with you that in my family, until I got married to, and I love you, Larry, I love my husband, 25 years, but I thought that all men just knew how to fix everything. Because my dad, my brother, my Uncle Don, all my relatives, all the Stensland men. Okay, I know. This is a sin, Dan. I know. I love you, Larry Bear.
I'm the same camp, so but, I get it.
But I did. Stones and glasses. I just like thought it was like in your DNA. So I totally took it for granted. Like my mom would be like, you know, Richard, I was thinking we need a bathroom, a powder room in the down. And like, voila. He was like magic. You know what I mean? My dad, my brother, my unk, they come over. You know, and then before you knew it, there was that powder room downstairs, the plumbing, the electric. Like, they can, back in the day, take a car apart, put it back together. Yeah.
Uncle Richard!
So, yeah, right? But, yeah, I got to talk about. So, here's the thing. I'm always looking for guys who are like the men in my family who it's like in their DNA. They like know how to fix stuff and they love doing it. And that's where I found my guys at Marvin E. Cannes. They're like men in my family. Okay. And so that's why I rave about them because I'm like, ooh, Hercules. Yeah, exactly. Fabulous. Hercules. And I'm like, Larry, don't touch that. The Marvin E. Cannes guys are coming, honey. So, yeah, summertime, the heat, even though we have lower humidity now. But I'm telling you, if you're looking for guys like my guys at Marvin E. Cannes, you got to reach out to them. Marvin E. Cannes Heating and Air Conditioning, I can't rave about them enough. But they came out, you know, tuned up the AC unit, made sure we were all good to go for summertime. take my advice, get your AC unit serviced this summer. If Marvin E. Cans, if they feel that your unit needs to be replaced, they're going to give you an honest assessment at a fair price and install a high efficiency train, T-R-A-N-E, AC unit. Hard to stop a train, as they say. Visit my guys, MarvinEcans.com, K-A-N-Z-E.com, MarvinEcans.com. Make sure you tell them Dawn sent you. So we're getting some updates on the suspect in the shooting of this off-duty Border Patrol agent who was shot in the face. This happened in New York City. We think about our law enforcement and these attacks, these violent attacks on law enforcement in general, right? But in this one specifically, the headline is off-duty Customs and Border Protection officer who was shot in the face is, thank God, recovering. So we're getting some new information. But this was an apparent botched robbery in Fort Washington Park over the weekend. And Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem making an announcement just this morning. Our own executive producer, Dan Borowski, has been monitoring the latest on that. So I defer to you, Dan, as you've been, I mean, this is a breaking news, developing news situation that's just unfolding.
Yeah, Noem was up there. CBP Commissioner Rodney Scott and Tom Homan talking about the situation that played out here with New York City, but also giving a general sense, Dawn, on the current status of violence against ICE agents and such. So let's start with the specificity here of the New York City case, where she gives an update on the Border Patrol agent shot there, but uses some very strong words that has now set Twitter, a.k.a. X aflame. Take a listen.
And we just recently, in the last couple of days, have had one of our own that has been attacked and has been harmed and dangerously by violent criminals that have been run loose here in New York City, but also in this country, as a result of sanctuary city policies and the policies of the Biden administration. I just want you all to know that we have our hearts and our prayers going out with our officer and with his family and his friends, and we'll be lifting him up in prayer for his quick recovery and his healing from this terrible tragedy that has befallen him. Listen, our officer was off duty on Saturday evening when him and his friend were attacked. They were attacked by two individuals that were set on robbing them, and thankfully he had his service weapon with him and was able to defend himself and his friend and injured one of those individuals that was trying to do them harm. His quick action speaks to his tenacity and his excellence in training and skill, and because of that, one of the perpetrators was wounded in this interaction and was incarcerated when he came in to get medical treatment. One of the suspected attackers, the one that was injured, his name is Miguel Francisco Mora Nunez, a Dominican national that was entering into this country illegally back in 2023. He was then released back into this country by the Biden administration. Miguel Francisco Mora Nunez is and has a rap sheet that is a mile long. He was arrested. He was charged with grand larceny and also assault. The state of Massachusetts has an active warrant out for him for armed robbery with a firearm. He also has many other charges against him, such as kidnapping and witness intimidation. There's absolutely zero reason that someone who is scum of the earth like this should be running loose on the streets of New York City.
It's a sin. So not only do we have, you know, this officer, again, off duty, but attacked in this way. And then you hear that somebody with a rap sheet. Now, they were set to deport him, right, Dan? So he was set to be deported, but then for some reason, he stays. Sound familiar?
Rodney Scott, as CBP Commissioner, Dunn.
These two individuals, the two assailants, were released into the United States after being apprehended because of failed policies. President Trump stepped up and fixed those failed policies on January 20th of this year. With the support from Secretary Noem, we now have one of the most secure, we have the most secure border that I've ever seen in my entire lifetime. Much of that resolution was by fixing failed policies based on facts and evidence. Sanctuary city policies across this nation and some of these, and even states in some cases, are failed policies. The facts and evidence are there in front of you. It's time for local leadership and state leadership to step up to the plate like President Trump did, acknowledge crime is crime, acknowledge the fact that there's no global information system where we can vet these people coming into the United States. We do not know who they are, and we have to have border security where we simply know and control who and what enters our country. Just
now, I will say to his credit, Mayor Eric Adams, former cop who's trying to keep his job, but he's an independent. He's one of those running against Mamdani, the basically communist or self-proclaimed socialist Democrat. But Mayor Eric Adams says this suspect is, quote, exactly the type of person the city is cooperating with the federal government to try to capture. So Adams putting word out that he separates himself from progressives. And we've seen it here in Pennsylvania, by the way, recently with those protests. But he's saying, no, we need to work with federal law enforcement to get these dangerous guys off the street.
A sanctuary city.
Oh, geez, yeah.
More on that from Homan, Don?
Yes.
Secretary said it, Rodney said it. Sanctuary cities are sanctuaries for criminals.
Yep.
Hard stop.
Well said.
I've been doing this since 1984. I've never seen a situation where I see it today. New York City, how many times do you want to see NYPD attacked by illegal alien criminals in the city? Now a federal officer. How many citizens of this city have been attacked by illegal aliens in this city? You see the polls. Everybody agrees we should be arresting public safety threat illegal aliens, but you got a city council here that locked us out of Rikers Island. Are you kidding me? So an illegal alien in Rikers Island we can't talk to. We don't have access to. That makes the city unsafe. Every sanctuary city is unsafe. I'll say it again. Sanctuary cities are sanctuaries for criminals.
Amen. And that should be the attitude of everyone. They said, by the way, NYPD is not permitted to hold these kind of guys for federal agents. Even when they get somebody like this, NYPD in the same, I believe, here in Philadelphia and across the nation in blue cities that are so-called sanctuary, Montgomery County, I've reported on this recently, Bucks County, a little different. Bucks County, the sheriff there has said, no, if somebody's a dangerous person, we're allowed to hold them. But this is literally being debated in our area as whether local law enforcement could hold somebody who is ID'd as a dangerous, formerly like convicted person with a rap sheet, and the local police are not allowed to hold them for ICE to just deport them. That is crazy. That is crazy. And that's why we all know it's very unpopular.
We should probably break out, Dawn.
Okay.
Here. Yeah, we're running a bit behind.
We'll take a quick break. Get your thoughts, if we can. 855-839-1210. Be right back. Just to wrap up on the previous comment, Dan has some breaking news that is, or developing news that's pretty incredible. So we want to get to that. But I just want to wrap up on the Kristi Noem, Tom Homan news conference that happened this morning as that officer is recovering after being shot in the face and to an illegal, somebody here illegally with a long rap sheet, according to authorities, in custody. We have, looking at the result of the defund the police movement, just going back a second, remember that during the Biden administration, this was in May of 2024, new information was released to us. How agencies were reporting nearly, it was 79,000, a little over 79,000 officers were assaulted. And this happened in 2023, marking the highest officer assault rate over the past decade. But a huge number of individuals being assaulted. And now we're going to supersize that. Listen to the statistic that is given. And this is Kristi Noem putting this in perspective with violence against officers. And this amid the media reporting, the rhetoric by the left, and then spilling out into the streets.
We've seen violence against our officers go up over 830% just in recent days because of the rhetoric out of politicians and the rhetoric out of individuals who are letting this victimization go on and on against the public. So I would call on everybody today to recognize what can happen, how in one moment someone's life can change, their whole family can change. And it is happening every day across this country. And this officer and his family, while today they are suffering, they still continue to serve the public and recognize that they want to go back out and make sure that they're doing all that they can to uphold the rule of law in this country. We're doing everything in our power to make sure that our officers out on the streets have the equipment and the training and the resources and the backup that they need to do their jobs. But they should never have to deal with an individual who was arrested four different times for violating the law and then released.
100%. Think about yesterday, a great event. Obviously, our own Nick Cale, Greg Stocker, many of you were participating, more than 2,100 bikers, all participating in the Families Behind the Badge Children's Foundation, that so-called, you know, it's Bend to the Shore bike ride, 38th annual, raising, well, we're closing in on a lot of amazing numbers, but still trying to reach the $1.5 million mark, but about $1.4-ish million. Thank you for doing that. And just being there with widows like Maureen Faulkner, like Judy Cassidy, so many others that we were talking to, and, you know, some officers who are wheelchair bound, for example, being shot on the job. And that's just it. These are real people with families and kids at home, and they want to just come home. They're doing a job. And so for anybody who's protesting, for anybody who's an official, to make them out to be so-called Gestapo or evil, that's just so wrong. That's evil to do that. And you're putting them in danger. So thank you to those of you. And you can still go to FBBCF, Families Behind the Badge Children's Foundation.org. You can still donate, because those dollars, it's a 501c3 nonprofit, tax deductible. But when you donate, you're donating directly to helping families and children who've lost their loved one, just like Christy Noem just said. Locally here, that money stays local. So I just wanted to put that out there, and I just can't help but think about yesterday and just one of the widows just breaking down and tears rolling down her face, just saying, you know, I don't want to hear about anybody talking about their bad day, because when you find out that the husband, your husband who you love, the love of your life, the father of your children, is not coming home, that's a bad day. So just put that in perspective. Want to get to Dan Borowski, good eye, once again, as Dan has just found this something.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, this is amazing,
Dan.
Oh,
wow.
A Dan discovery.
Yeah, so going viral now. Sorry, wow, my mic is way hot. Sorry. So Andrew Callahan, a guy that used to do a show called No All Gas, No Breaks on YouTube, a really big viral show. He used to go to, like, conventions and such and kind of make fun of bronies, essentially. Kind of spun that off into something he now calls Channel 5, Dawn. And Andrew Callahan does really good investigative work looking at the drug scene in Kensington, and he talks to the drug dealers. But Dawn, all of a sudden, just a couple hours ago, randomly, no promo for it or anything, he pops up and has a 3-hour exclusive interview with who, Dawn? Hunter Biden.
Did he find him in Kensington?
I have no idea where he found him. But I have some clips. Well, two short clips, just an example as to what we're hearing from Hunter Biden.
Uh-oh.
That's going to set conservative media ablaze. And just a sample, Dawn, take a listen. Ready?
For someone, am I going to be like all these Democrats say, you have to talk about and realize that people are really upset about illegal immigration. F*** you. How do you think your hotel room gets cleaned? How do you think you got food on your f***ing table? Who do you think washes your dishes? Who do you think does your f***ing garden? Who do you think is here by the f***ing sheer just grit and will that they figured out a way to get here because they thought that they could give themselves and their family a better chance. And he's somehow convinced all of us that these people are the criminals.
Wow, nice language there.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
A private education in Delaware. That's what it'll buy you. Real, real nice. So I guess this was just released on Channel 5 on YouTube by Andrew Callahan. It was just released like 20 minutes ago, and now it's already going viral. Isn't it amazing? He's very upset because he wants that cheap labor, you know, because he's very wealthy, well-to-do, beautiful home, beautiful young wife, and he wants to make sure that he can hire, you know, cheap labor for his garden.
Oh my gosh,
and
Hunter,
his cook,
so off base.
Right?
Oh,
whatever happened to a livable wage
to
actually pay people above the table? But
everything that's being memed about Democrats online and how they're essentially saying, oh, our servants are going away. Here's Hunter Biden doubling down on
wow.
that. Wow. He goes on, Dawn. Taking people behind the scenes of radio and such, when you get clips like this, they come in uncensored, and it takes a little bit to censor them, right, to bleep them. So I got another 20 seconds into it. It gets pretty crazy, and I'll get some more for after the break. But here's 20 seconds more, Dawn. Take a listen.
And he's somehow convinced all of us that these people are the f***ing criminals. White men in America are 45 more times likely to commit a violent crime than an immigrant. And the media says, well, you got David Axelrod and, you know, Rahm Emanuel. So
f-ing smart Rahm Emanuel. He said, we got to understand that these people are really mad, and these we got to appeal to these white voters. Rahm.
And then he goes and says another.
Well, yeah, and that's the problem. So, you know, normally we could play it if the guy didn't curse so badly and frequently. But here's the thing, and I'm glad, first of all, I'm glad Hunter is clean, and he's gone through all the rehab and all of that. But maybe while he was, away, I don't know, when he was on the Burisma board or on the crack pipe, he missed the story about how we don't keep statistics on illegals, you see. Like in Philadelphia or New York or any of these blue cities, see, we don't have the luxury of keeping the stats because these individuals, you just heard Kristi Noem and Tom Homan saying that they were, they would say they would just let them go. They don't hold them for ICE. And we don't keep stats differentiating an illegal non-citizen person versus a citizen, you see? So there are zero stats. So that's why he can say what he just said when he just said, oh, well, a white American guy, well, that guy that he's talking about could very well be an illegal person from wherever, but they're just considered a citizen. Do you see what I'm saying? That we don't have the stats. Now, the only time that we did have the stats was when NYPD got really aggravated because, and I think it was then Mayor Adams, as I recall, who was saying, there are no stats that tell us that illegals are any worse, blah, blah. Well, they, guess what? They, God bless them, NYPD, they kept the stats, even though they weren't supposed to. And then they released them. Remember that? And they released the stats in Times Square as to how many illegals were attacking people, especially like ladies, older ladies, senior citizen people. Remember that? And then, oops, they let the genie out of the bag because we knew. We knew that those stats perhaps could be resounding if we kept the stats like here in Philadelphia or any other state where you have blue cities. So that's why he doesn't know what he's talking about.
You guys are going to have so much fun with this tomorrow morning. Here's Andrew. A quick question regarding the crack before we head to break.
Okay.
I was drinking so much alcohol, almost a handle of vodka a day. And alcohol is the most destructive drug, not just to your body, but it puts you in more danger than any other drug that I've ever experienced. And then you add on top of that the amount of crack that I was using at the time. And crack cocaine, in terms of your physical health, is not as dangerous as the situation that you put yourself in to be able to obtain it.
How do you get crack?
One of the things I don't want to do is give a how-to to any moron like myself that may think that it's a good idea. But crack cocaine is a...
To ask him where he gets his crack. Three hours long, Don.
Here's the thing. That there are some estimates that he's worth as much as, reportedly he might be as worth as much as $200+ million. So I'll just say to you, it's kind of a sad commentary when a guy who, think about what he could have done with his life. If you could be worth $200+ million as a crack addict and an alcoholic, and that's like the smartest Biden, wow. It's a commentary that it kind of blows my mind as far as what this guy could have done with his life if he had not been addicted for so many years of his life. I will say that. And there are so many people who say, even at one point, remember that there were, I don't know, texts on WhatsApp and he was just saying, yeah, I'm running things or something. You kind of believe it because even high, he seemed to be more with it and brighter than a lot of those who were running things. It's just, but what a potty mouth this guy has.
Right? It's tough. It's tough for me. I don't know. Stop cursing, dude.
Yeah. And he talks a good game, though, doesn't he? He just does not have the facts.
You. How do you think your hotel room gets cleaned? See, how do you think you got food on your f***ing table?
Yeah. Why don't you pay people what they're worth, a so-called livable wage? And see, this undermines the unions. It undermines American citizens who should earn a real wage, not the under-the-table money that you want to pay your servants. 855-839-1210. Thanks for being here. At Dawn Stensland. Please follow me on X. Like us on YouTube. We'll be right back. So we are still waiting for the results of the DC 33 contract vote. that should be ratified today following that tentative deal as far as striking sanitation workers, 911 operators, that sort of thing. But I don't have the official word right now, so hopefully, knock wood, all the trash gets picked up if you didn't have Monday delivery last week or Monday pickup. Let's get to what is Senator Lindsey Graham is talking about getting a whooping.
Eight. And Putin, your turn is coming. You know, Donald Trump is the Scotty Scheffler of American politics and foreign diplomacy, and he's about to put a whooping on your ass. What's going to happen here is that Trump is going to impose tariffs on people that buy Russian oil. China, India, and Brazil, those three countries buy about 80% of cheap Russian oil. That's what keeps Putin's war machine going. So President Trump's going to put 100% tariff on all those countries, punishing them for helping Putin.
Well, I don't think he should curse like that. That's not very Christian or nice. Supposed to be a gentleman.
Well, there.
Going to put a whooping on you.
Never heard Mr. Rogers say something similar, but it kind of sounds like it's coming from his voice, right?
I know. Mr. Rogers would never curse like that.
You know, Donald Trump is the Scotty Scheffler of American politics.
Okay,
oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness. We did see Scotty with Baby Bennett. That was wonderful. And that'll be Dan Borowski.
Yeah.
Before we know it.
Next I know
fall.
Nothing about golf. I apologize.
Well, Scotty, a lot of people might know him because he had his baby out, you know, after he won. And the baby comes toddling out, little 18-month-old baby.
Is Don Giordano a fan of Scotty?
Pretty adorable.
No, I'm not.
You're not.
He's a great guy, and he apparently is unbelievable. But as a golfer, and people listening that are golfers, Don, I got to turn away every time he swings, shut my eyes briefly at the top of the swing. The reason is, did you notice how he moves his right foot?
No. Nope.
I mean, it's crazy. Nobody else in golf would ever be able to do that and be at the level that he's at. It's beyond unorthodox.
So you dislike him because of the way he moves his right foot?
Well, I didn't say I dislike him. I said I can't watch golf, though, and he's the prime guy because you can't watch that. He's that good. Nobody can have a move like that, Dawn, and succeed. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, see, he gets away with it. That's talent.
Well, that's talent. But, I mean, the average golfer, I don't know if Larry golfs or not, you watch that, and you go out and hit a golf ball, oh, you're going to be messed up.
It's like the Skyhook, right?
Yeah, it's unorthodox beyond belief. So, Dawn, we got Scott Presler coming on today, and we have Todd Shepard, an update on the St. Joe's story
nice.
Of the guy who got kicked out. They said it was students that wanted it. Here, there's a call. It was just the student newspaper. We'll explain.
Dom Giordano Show starts right now.
Don Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.